When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Government. Maybe it was a political killing.
Maybe someone's picking off costumed heroes.
Welcome to Rewatchability. It's the podcast where we rewatch old movies and talk about how they hold up today. I am Captain Rewatchability, Robert Larone. I thought I'd try with the Captain Rewatchability thing.
Sure.
That's my superhero moniker, alias, if you will. And none of the usual guys are here today. They are all on vacation, but heroes don't get vacations.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, neither do I. I don't know if that makes me a hero. It's like causation does not equal. Anyway, the point is today I brought in Glenn Bowerman from the Spacing Radio podcast.
Howdy.
And we're going to talk about what movie?
We're going to talk about The Watchmen.
The Watchmen, the 2009 movie directed by Zack Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
It has superheroes. It has the Cold War. It has everything. But before we get into that, first of all, I want to thank our Patreons. Those are the people who give us $1, $3, $5 a month. You are the heroes to us. You Watchmen us and help us. That's not a very good analogy. Thank you for giving your donations to us. It keeps the lights on. We also give you the podcast early, ad-free, and it is in slightly higher quality. So you get to hear, you know, the full fidelity of our deep radio voices.
The ultimate cut, if you will.
That's right. The ultimate cut. Now, we're talking about Watchmen. Glenn, this was your suggestion.
Yep.
Why? Why Watchmen? It was, what, 2009?
Yep.
That is 10 years ago. It may not even be the decade anniversary of this movie. So why are we talking about this?
Well, I grew up loving comic books. I think people our age especially probably were raised on that glorious like Fox X-Men cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
And then, so good.
And if I was good, you know, my parents would buy me something off the rack, like,
yeah,
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Spider-Man, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then I kind of took a break, and then I got back into it when the X-Men movie came out when we were in
okay.
high school.
Okay.
And I started buying off the rack for myself and like really getting into it, like, you know, even random shit like Thor and all that kind of stuff.
Thor!
Well, back,
that obscure!
Back when, well, he was obscure in 2001.
Right.
No one was talking about Thor.
It's kind of amazing that he's become, like, the big dude.
Yeah.
Because I didn't care about Thor.
No, he was no one's favorite character.
Okay.
But yeah, now we're in an age, and we can get into it, but like I think this movie was already responding to like, oh, there's such a glut of superhero movies. Like,
right.
You didn't even know at the time. Like,
right.
If you thought there was too many superhero movies, oh boy.
Oh, sweet child, you ain't seen nothing yet.
So I think like now it's good to talk to. And also I think this movie is ultimately more timely now than it was 10 years ago.
Right. Because the world's coming to an end.
Yeah. You know, we have a cognitively impaired pop culture figure as the president. Which,
just like Watchmen and Richard Nixon.
Yeah. Or at the time that Watchmen came out, like we had Ronald Reagan, right?
That's
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, you know, there's a show coming out, which I I'm going to watch with interest. But,
the Watchmen television show.
On HBO, yeah. And I don't know what to expect. I'm interested. Could be good, could be terrible.
Could be good, could be terrible. We'll have to definitely talk about that a little bit later because it does sound kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And I think I'm ready for some more Watchmen. So, Glenn, when was the first time that you saw the movie Watchmen? Did you see it in theaters?
I saw it in theaters. I had never read the book. And when I saw the trailer, it had that awesome Smashing Pumpkins song.
Right.
And I was like, I got to see this movie. So I ran out and got the book.
That was an amazing trailer.
It was such a good trailer.
And it played before Batman Beyond, I believe.
I think so, yeah. And so I ran out, got the book, loved the book. Like, it just ate it up in like a day or two. Rich, dense, everything.
Yeah.
It hit me in the right spot at the right time.
Right.
And then so I was ready for the movie to come out when it did.
And how did you feel when you watched it the first time? Like, what were your impressions?
I actually loved it, and this is very controversial because they're especially
Zack Snyder is great. Stop saying mean things about him.
Stop making Martha jokes. I loved it, and it's controversial because Watchmen, a lot of people love the Watchmen, even
right.
people who don't really care about comic books.
Yep.
They love the Watchmen, and you know, there were a lot of people that were like, it's not true enough to the book, or you know, it's too this, it's too that. I thought it was fairly faithful until the bitter end, which we'll get
right.
into. And yeah, I thought it was a good take on the subject material.
Nice. I think I had a similar experience. I loved the comic book sort of universes as they were shown to us on TV and through films, mostly when I was growing up. My brother was sort of more into comic books because he could draw worth a shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he also would buy like Wizard magazine. So I was really interested in like the lore of superheroes, but I never got around to reading most of the comic books.
Right.
When the Watchmen trailer came out, I remember it excited everybody.
Yeah.
And I had a friend who passed around her copy of the graphic novel to all of us. And we all read it and we were all blown away. So it felt like a big like communal event. Like
yeah.
Watchmen's coming. Like this is going to be it. This is going to be like the best superhero thing. Because we've had Nolan's Batmans, which like raised the bar pretty high.
Yeah.
But this has like the sort of meta narrative about superheroes is it's so much more. It's going to bring it all into the world. And then when the movie actually came out, I saw it in theaters, and there were parts of it I really loved, and there were parts of it that irked me a little bit.
Sure, yeah.
And like some of them are stupid. Like in rewatching it, I'm definitely reevaluating whether or not those things still bother me. Like for some reason, I was ridiculously bothered by Malin Ackerman's performance.
That's the Silk Spectre.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
right. I just thought she was like bad, bad, bad.
Yeah.
This time, I didn't hate her anyway, but I don't know. Maybe I was just like more angry at that point. But also like things like I didn't like the way that Richard Nixon looked. I remember being like incensed that they didn't get Nixon right. Frank Langella's right there. I mean, he doesn't look the part, but he gives the performance.
Right. It was a lot of nose putty. A lot of nose putty.
Yeah. And there are some other moments that that I don't love. But I remember I was so anticipating the movie because it brought together like so many great elements. Like I like Patrick Wilson as an actor mm-hmm. from Angels in America.
Yeah.
I like Jackie Earle Haley. He's great. All those people.
Billy Crudup.
Yeah, Billy Crudup. I loved him in Almost Famous.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Which, you know, now he's a blue god.
Instead of a golden.
Instead
one.
Of a golden.
I'm picking up
Thank
what
you.
You're putting down.
Thank you. Yeah. That was such a stretch. But I love Almost Famous so much.
yeah, for sure.
So I guess I was a bit disappointed, and I haven't, I don't think, revisited it since I saw it in theaters, and in that time, a lot has happened. Like, Zack Snyder took the reins, basically, of the DC superhero franchise. He made the Batman v Superman, he started making the Justice League, and he also did the Superman.
Yeah.
And I saw the Superman. I tried to watch the beginning of Batman v Superman, and I just hate everything that he's done since.
Well, that's why I also wanted to talk about it, because I have grown to really hate Zack Snyder. Like, I didn't watch anything he had done prior to The Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, watch The Watchmen. I watched The Watchmen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. And then, as a fan of comic books, the source material, I hated everything he did with Superman, with Batman versus Superman, whatever influence he had on the Justice League clearly sort of tainted it as well.
Yeah.
No amount of like snarky Joss Whedon kind of humor could save it.
Oh, you know. Man.
So, that's why else I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's a good reason. And I think like I'm glad to talk about it at this point. I think it's great. I'm interested in seeing the series. So let's talk about it.
Okay.
Let's do it. Watchmen. So if you haven't seen it or you can't quite remember or maybe you only read the comic book 15 years ago, it takes place in a sort of alternate reality. It's very much like ours, but there are a few subtle differences. Mm-hmm. Like Richard Nixon is the president.
His fifth term, I think they say.
Fifth term. Yeah. That's a scary thought. If a president who was a terrible president who should have been impeached and thrown out of the White House could just like hold on to power somehow.
Right. But that couldn't happen. That couldn't happen.
But it starts with a guy watching Nixon on TV. The Cold War is escalating. It's this guy with like a Rhett Butler mustache. He's smoking a cigar. He has a little smiley face.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the comedian.
Yep.
And, you know, he seems a bit drunk. He's having a time. He gets attacked by an unknown assailant and thrown out the window. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of beginning of the movie before it kicks into this sort of montage of history events all set to the tune of Bob Dylan's The Times They Are A-Changin'.
Yeah. And I just have to say, like, as a fan of the graphic novel, they covered so much with that montage. Like, that's one of the best uses of montage I've ever seen.
I have
hundreds
to agree.
Of pages.
I have to agree. It's also, like, really powerful, I found. Like, I love the way that it sort of inserts this world into our world, the way that it plays with alternate reality. I still don't like how Nixon looks.
Okay.
But
we'll put a pin in that.
The rest of it, I thought like, yes, mm-hmm. yes. And even like the Bob Dylan song, I'm like, you know, like part of me, the person who's like, you know, really serious about music is like, I don't know about using a folk song in this comic book movie, but it feels good, man.
Yeah.
And it works pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, like the original book, I think the story that Alan Moore had was very slim, like the actual main plot. And so he fleshed it out with all this backstory and mm-hmm. world building, which just would not, you know, translate to cinema very well. You'd have an eight-hour movie. So, like, the way that they did this in a title sequence, just in a montage, just that's – I have to give it to old Zach.
Old Zach. Yeah, I also love – some of the scenes, like, I love the Zapruder footage. Mm-hmm. You're like, there's Kennedy. And then you see the comedian on the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
And Dr. Manhattan shaking Kennedy's hands in a forest, kind of Forrest Gumpy. But, you know, I think it all works as a beginning. And this is what sets off the movie. The comedian has been murdered and somebody has to investigate. Who's it going to be? It's going to be Rorschach. He's the only superhero left because they have banned superheroing. All this is explained in the montage, basically.
Yeah.
Like, it shows us that, yes, a long time ago, like in the 30s, there were these superheroes who were sort of corny and their costumes didn't fit very well and they were smiling too much.
Yeah.
And then there's a second generation of superheroes. I just love, like, the whole, like, the world building, and I applaud Zack Snyder for putting it all in there and making it fit in, like, an interesting and cohesive way.
Right.
Coherent way.
Hear that, world? Somebody's applauding Zack Snyder.
Yeah, well.
We'll hold off.
Well, that's, you know. So we got the whole Watchmen team. We got Rorschach, who's played by Jackie Earle Haley. And, I mean, he's, like, the main dude.
Yeah.
He's got, like, that awesome mask.
Yeah.
And I love the way that the mask was rendered in this film because, of course, in the comic books, it's just, like, a white face with some symmetrical ink blots on them, you know?
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be anything. But in this, they made, like, it's like a shifting. It looks like it's, like, LCD shifting on a sock.
Yeah, it's mercurial kind of, yeah.
Yeah. I was impressed by that. I think that still holds up because I think of all the ways that they try to make, you know, these comic book ideas look real on the movie screen. That works.
Yeah.
But he is investigating. He's got to talk to his old pal. We got Night Owl, Patrick Wilson, and since the superheroes are no longer allowed to superhero, they're mostly hanging out. He's trading war stories with the old Night Owl. We have Dr. Manhattan, who is Billy Crudup, and he's been irradiated, and he is really the only person with actual superpowers in this universe.
He has, like, Promethean, like, godlike powers.
Yeah, that's right. And we also know that the United States has used him as a weapon in order to basically win the Vietnam War, which, you know, in turn is part of what changed this history. And there's also, we got the Silk Spectre, two of them as well. There's like the older one and the younger one. And these ones are particularly sort of weird because the old Silk Spectre doesn't seem that old.
Yeah.
Like she seems like she's in like a community theater production and they like old personed her up because they couldn't find someone of appropriate age.
Some kind of like, you know, when in first year university when a young actor does like Blanche from Streetcar, it's kind of like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a fading Southern belle. You're 17. You're 17.
But of course, it's to accommodate all of the flashbacks, which Zack Snyder sort of integrates into the main action of the thing. So all the stuff that sort of takes place from the 30s to whenever, I guess to the 80s, we get like bits of it through the montage. I mean, through various montages that happen throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming today. I ask you acquaint yourselves with this map of high crime areas.
This is all bullshit.
You know, for a guy who calls himself the comedian, I can never tell when you're joking.
Watch me. That's the real joke. Didn't work 15 years ago. Sure as hell ain't gonna work now just because you want to keep playing cowboys and Indians.
Maybe we should agree on no drinking at meetings. Look, Rorschach and I have made real headway on the gang problem by working together.
With a group this size, it seems like a publicity stunt. Not in it for the ink.
We can do so much more. We can save this world.
It's good to have that sort of stuff. But it does, I mean, do you find it clunky at the beginning?
No, I think I love the pace. And yeah, it's he manages to cut back and forth in time without it being jarring.
Mm. Yeah. Rorschach tells Night Owl that he suspects that somebody is bumping off superhero, that somebody is knocking off the mask.
Yeah.
He says. And so that sets him on a path to visit all the different heroes and investigate. Though he's not like a great detective. Like he has a very like Raymond Chandler-esque narrative voice.
Yeah.
But some of his like observations are a bit iffy. Like at one point he talks about Ozymandias and he's like, "Veit, possible homosexual. We'll investigate later."
Yeah, he's atrocious.
Yeah.
But also kind of our man on the ground. Like, he's the audience's way into the movie. So you have to kind of reconcile that this guy sucks, but he's our guy.
Yeah. He's a tough protagonist, I think, for this particular moment in time because he has some pretty right-wing tendencies. Like, he's a brutal dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't mind breaking civilians' thumbs or arms or whatever. He is just, like, damaged, and he is going to commit more damage, which is in stark contrast to some of the other heroes. Like, Patrick Brown as Night Owl, too, he's kind of, like,
golly
schlumpy.
Gee. Yeah.
Yeah, he has very much of that, like, old Batman, 1950s campy Batman sort of goodness and wholesomeness. But also, he's just not very, like, it's sort of funny the way that the movie plays it. Like, he's not very, like, manly or heroic or, you know, he's, like,
he's
pudgy.
He's not driven at all.
He's, like, lost his, you know, he's out of shape.
Yeah. But I also like that, you know, the two of them used to be partners.
Yes.
And they're basically, like, the two takes that you find of Batman. Like, it's like someone, like, split Batman into two personalities where, like, you have the very, like, Frank Miller. He's described as almost like a Nazi, you know.
Yes.
yeah, very grim, very dark, very reactionary and, yeah, conservative, ultra conservative.
Yeah.
And that's Rorschach. And then you have the more like, oh, I like my gadgets and, you know, I study birds and mythology and, you know, and that's the other side of Batman, more like the 70s and back when Batman was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. That's an I love those old Batmans.
Yeah.
They are a lot of fun. They don't really fit the current superhero mold. Or I guess, you know, superheroes go through different molds as time goes on. They do more investigating.
They have to talk to all the members of the team.
At one point, is it Rorschach that goes to visit Moloch?
Yes, he does, yeah.
And Moloch is played by another Canadian.
Matt Frewer.
Matt Frewer, Max Headroom himself. Mm-hmm. And I love this portrayal in particular. And I remember finding it like kind of like almost moving the first time that I saw it. Because here we have this guy who was like the villain to the old school superheroes. And, you know, back when it was fun, right? Mm-hmm. Like the stakes weren't high. They weren't like massacring any countries or anything like that. It was just like thievery and, you know, and wearing pajamas outside.
Yeah.
But he, you know, got caught, went to jail, served his time, and, you know, he's like living his life, and now he's dying of cancer.
Yeah. He's kind of Gil from The Simpsons.
Yeah. who is, you know, really, you know, what's his face from Glengarry Glen Ross?
Oh,
Jack Lemmon. Aw, oh, gee.
Yeah.
You gotta buy this place. I need the leads. I love that performance. And his ears, it's very, but he gets murdered and they pin it on Rorschach.
Yep.
So Rorschach ends up going to jail, which puts an end to his investigating.
Right.
But meanwhile, there's some stuff happening with Night Owl and Silk Spectre.
Well, she is in a relationship with Dr. Manhattan.
Yes.
And Dr. Manhattan is the most important element of the state's national security at the time.
Yeah.
But he's also working on a project with Ozymandias, the world's smartest man, who's kind of like a now, I guess, the
he's
touchstone
Elon
would be
Musk.
Elon Musk.
He's Elon Musk, yes. Yes, we got to watch out for that Elon Musk.
But they're working on an alternative energy invention that's supposed to like bring about world peace.
Right, yes. But he doesn't have time for a relationship.
Yep.
You know, it's hard when you are an omniscient being. You can be everywhere at once, but you can't be in this poor woman's life.
Yep.
So also, he gets accused of causing cancer in a lot of people, including like his old ex-girlfriend,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, his original girlfriend from the flashbacks and his partner in research when he was working on the thing that made him the big blue god man.
Yeah. So he goes to Mars. And she goes into the arms of Dan the Night Owl.
Yep.
And this is, you know, they have like a really sad affair.
Yeah.
It is tough to watch.
Well, it's also sad because the Doomsday Clock, right? The clock, which is a real thing, I found out. I thought it was invented for the comic book.
No.
It's a real thing.
Yes.
So we're on the precipice of like total nuclear war, you know, Americans versus the Soviets. And Dr. Manhattan is supposed to be able to protect America, but they say like 0.1% of the nukes from USSR get through, it's still going to like obliterate all life on Earth.
This so it's mutually very assured destruction.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
So he can't do everything. So they have to find some way to find peace.
Yeah.
You know. But
instead they just smooch.
Instead they just smooch. Yeah, and but they sort of get their mojo back a little bit, and they decide to, like, suit up again.
Yep.
And that's sort of nice. They go and save some people from a burning building.
Yeah.
But then they have some more awkward sex.
Yeah.
In the
the floating little dune buggy thing.
Yeah.
The dirigible. I don't know what you call it.
I just don't know how to talk about this scene because it really takes the movie to a complete standstill for me because I think I have to describe it because in the first sex scene where they're going to have sex, does he like prematurely ejaculate?
No, he can't get it up.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, I couldn't quite remember which thing it was. But it's still like, it's like sad. Though, you know, it happens and, you know, if it happens, it's not the end of the world.
Yep.
And keep going, guys. But then he has this, so they've donned their superhero costumes. They've gone out. They've saved some people. They're feeling good about themselves. So, yeah, they're going to have some sex. Mm-hmm. What are they going to have sex to? Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah.
Hey, some people think he's very sexy.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, it's like Hallelujah. He can get it up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And there is like an ejaculation joke where like there's a climax to the sex scene and they accidentally press a button and a
flamethrower. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
We get it. Thank you, Zach. Thank you, Zachary.
Oh, my God. It's in the comic. They do have sex in the comic.
Yes.
Though I don't believe it says the entirety of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah plays.
No.
You could have used the cover. There's Jeff Buckley's. Give Katie Lang a call.
But it's the 80s.
That's right? A good yeah. point.
You got to set it in the
That's
80s.
A good point. Yeah. Yeah. John Cale?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I appreciate the soundtrack for the most part. Like, yep. I think they set the tone well with the song choices. Like, in that opening scene where the comedian gets murdered, Nat Cole's Unforgettable is playing.
Unforgettable.
Like, they're a good, like, Zack Snyder is a music video director.
That is very true.
And when he does scenes many. Like that, that's his core competency.
Yeah, he does them very well. I can't help, though. I found myself wanting for like a more traditional score in many moments, and maybe it's just because the way that today's superhero movies have conditioned me. I found, yeah, like a lot of the times the songs work very well, but a lot of the times it's like such an obvious choice. It's like, you know, Zack Snyder picked up the first 60s mixtape that he found. It's like, oh, this Sound of Silence would be good.
Right. You want the horns and the arpeggios. And the
yeah. But some of it works very well. Like, the movie is basically like strung along three Bob Dylan tunes performed by Bob Dylan. Jimi Hendrix is awesome and, you know, awesome way before Watchmen cover of All Along the Watchtower. Mm-hmm. And then there's that cover of Desolation Row at the end, which My Chemical Romance.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a good cover or not.
I don't care.
I can't say.
But I'm like a Bob Dylan fan, so like I just like, just play the Dylan one.
Just
man.
Play the Dylan one. Yeah. Or get somebody who is like, I mean, when you have somebody cover a song at the end of a movie like that, and there's been two preceding songs by the guy who wrote the song,
yeah.
You're saying something, right? You're saying something by choosing the artist.
Yeah.
And I just don't know what it means other than, like, here's some, like, crassness for you.
Yeah. I don't know what the reason behind that was, but I don't know. Maybe we're just grumpy.
Maybe we're just grumpy. Okay, so more stuff happens in the movie that we should talk about.
Sorry. They got to break Rorschach out of jail.
Oh, my God. Like, I love the fucking brutality of the scene where the guys who he's arrested before are going to take revenge on him. And so they come to him in his cell during a prison riot. And there's one guy who puts his arms in and Rorschach sort of ties him up in there.
Yeah.
And then his friends are just like, sorry, bud, and like saw off his arms.
Yeah, yeah, that didn't make too much sense, but it sets a good tone.
He's dead, Rorschach. Well, everyone's distracted. We thought we'd bring you a little housewarming gift. Something from the machine shop.
Hey, boss, you notice? None of that small world, tall order crap, because he knows once we slice open his lock, he's next on the block. Thatcher.
Good death, Rorschach! We got a prison full of killers out here. What have you got?
Your hands.
And then there's the guy that, like, is threatening him in the lunch line. And, you know, Rorschach kind of beats him up and pours hot oil from the lunch line. And he has, like, the most badass line of all time, which is like, you know, I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in with me.
Yes.
It's pretty gangster thing to say.
I mean, it is a pretty gangster thing to say, but now I feel like I think people wear that on a t-shirt now.
Yeah. And I don't want to talk to the people who have a t-shirt.
It's an extra large t-shirt. Nah, that's not fair. That's
with a fedora fair. On top.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all locked in here together. There's also, I mean, that reminded me of like some of the other brutality in this movie, because at one point this gang of I guess they're like culturally appropriating samurai outfits, gear, haircuts.
Yeah, yeah.
They look like they're, I don't know.
They're called the Top Knots.
Right, yeah. The Top Knots. They go and they sort of get worked up at one point, and they go and they decide to take on the original Night Owl, who is the old dude. And I mean, this is like, it's sort of an interesting scene because the old dude, he gets a couple good cracks in there. Yeah. And you can tell he's like, yes, I'm doing the thing that I was meant to do. And I'm remembering like all my bad guys and like, you know. And,
yeah.
And then they like beat his head in with a trophy.
Yeah. And I was doing, when I looked it up to see the differences between the director's cut that we watched and the theatrical release, that scene actually isn't in the theatrical release.
Oh, that makes sense.
But I do enjoy it, and it's a case of mistaken identity, because when the new Night Owl goes back into action, the Top Knot gang thinks that it's the old Night Owl. So inadvertently, Night Owl 2 kind of causes things to causes the first Night Owl to die.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's no fun.
No.
Yeah.
Great power and great responsibility and all that stuff.
They should write a comic about it.
Yeah, that's a good premise.
They also, Silk Spectre also goes up to Mars to sort of have a, what do you call it? Like a, it's like an exit interview for their relationship. And there's also a lot, I love a lot of the dialogue in this stuff because where Billy Crudup, who plays Dr. Manhattan's like, you're here to tell me that you're going to break up with me. I don't know that yet, but I will when you do it.
90 seconds from now. Yeah, it's kind of a head trip. But
I like
she's trying to convince him to care about humanity because he's become so removed from it because he's now like a god. But she needs him to come back to Earth and try and prevent this nuclear apocalypse.
Yeah. And it's heavy because he basically sees that the universe would suffer nothing by having humanity not in it. Like what exists out there without life is as beautiful and meaningful to him as our pathetic pond scum lives are.
Right.
So that's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
But they eventually figure out that Veidt is the guy who's behind all of this, Ozymandias. And so they go to confront him. And it's already too late because when Dr. Manhattan sort of comes back, he sets off all of these explosions which have the tachyon signature of Dr. Manhattan. Yeah. Is it tachyons?
Yeah, tachyons. scientific patter. It's made to look like it's Manhattan when it's actually Ozymandias.
Yeah. But basically killed all these people.
Major cities all over the world.
Yeah, all over the world, including like there's the kid that we know has been reading the comic book,
yep.
Tales of the Black Freighter, which is part of the comic book but isn't in the director's cut of the movie. He just dies.
Yep.
He just dies.
Yeah.
I found that truly upsetting.
I think it's meant to be. I remember it being in the comic book.
I'm sure it is, but I just, you know, it's like he was doing nothing. He just wanted some stories, man.
But the reason being that like Ozymandias seeing no way to prevent this nuclear apocalypse between, you know, the two major world powers, he basically has to trick humanity into loving each other and uniting.
Yeah.
And then there's the greatest, one of my favorite things about that is they all go to confront him and they're like, well, we're not going to let you get away with this. And he's like, I'm not a cartoon villain. I wouldn't tell you the plan if there was a chance you could stop it. I did it 30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And they're like, shit.
Yeah. Well, but then they're like, all right, let's go home. Like, Dr. Manhattan, who is the smartest and most powerful being in the universe, he's like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And the only person who is really upset about this at all is Rorschach.
Yeah.
He's not about to let them get away with that and, you know, killing all these people and causing all these lives to be lost. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, this is also, I found very moving when they're in Antarctica. Is it Antarctica or regular Arctica?
It's one of the Arctics.
So he's out there in the snow and Rorschach takes off his mask and he knows that Dr. Manhattan's not going to let him leave. This omniscient, powerful, the most smartest man in the universe, Billy Crudup, a golden god.
Yeah.
He's going to kill this man rather than let him go and try to spread the truth of what actually happened.
Yeah, because they all believe that the truth will set everyone back against each other and we'll be back into World War III.
Yeah.
Out of my way. People have to be told.
You know I can't let you do that.
Suddenly you discover humanity.
Grim.
It's grim.
Yeah. So that he explodes. He explodes Rorschach all over the snow.
Yeah. He's strawberry jam, man. Yeah. And that's pretty much, that's the end of the main plot of the movie. And there's just a few things that sort of follow up with it. Like there is the part where the Silk Spectre 2 goes and talks to her mom. And we haven't talked about this part, but there is a flashback where the comedian, the guy who we see die in the first act, he essentially tries to rape the Silk Spectre's mom, the original Silk Spectre, yeah, and is stopped. And then we find out that they had an affair after that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, Malin Ackerman goes to her mom and she's figured out, I mean, she's found
she's
out through Dr. Manhattan's visions that she's the product of their affair. And she's like, why? Why? How could you do that when you hated him?
Yeah.
And she's like, he gave me you.
Right.
I just don't know how to feel about that.
I would like, as two guys, to tread very carefully. But
I know.
I will say that, you know, relationships between victimizers and victims are complex. And, you know,
it's a complex note to end on.
Yeah. I don't think they make light of it. If they did, I would be yucked right out of the movie. But, like, you know, I don't think they try to vindicate the comedian for what he did.
Yeah.
There's other flashbacks where they show him being terrible to women as well.
Well, he's a monster.
Yeah, he's an absolute piece of shit.
Yeah.
But I don't think the movie lets him off the hook for that.
Yeah. And we should also mention he's played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who is the best at looking like he's having a great time while being a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And being just like cruel and awful.
Yeah.
He makes it an art.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. And that's Watchmen. I mean, it's a big movie with lots in it and like all the personal relationships and the superheroes and the Cold War. And it's a lot.
Yeah.
Do you like the changes that it makes from the comic book? Because in the comic book, it's a little bit different.
Yeah. In the comic book, so the end thing, it's still the basic same plan that Ozymandias thinks, you know, the world needs to unite. And the only way that they'll be united is with a common enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, I'm going to make up an enemy. And he genetically engineers like a tentacle monster with like a psychic clone brain that explodes and kills a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And truthfully, like, this is a part where, like, real nerds, like, get mad at me. And, like, you know, much love to the real nerds. I'm a pretend nerd. But, you know, the diehard fans of the source material hate that they changed the ending. But I actually think that this new ending, the movie ending, does what a lot of other comic books fail to do. Like, they just don't know how to land the plane. The third act always sucks. And what this movie does is actually tie the third act into everything we've seen before, instead of just being like, new thing, aliens from the sky. You know, this is actually like the solution is based on everything that has come before. And they kind of wrap it up in a very tidy bow.
Yeah.
So I think it's, sorry, Alan Moore fans, like, it's kind of a slight improvement on just in the way they ended it.
Yeah, I remember thinking the tentacle monster was a bit silly.
It was kind of silly. Yeah.
And I do like that this ties into, I think, you know, what was a real world sort of thing. I remember that Cold War being a dealy, right?
Yeah,
it was a real thing.
Was,
wasn't there a missile crisis, a Cuban?
Some kind.
Remember, wasn't
it? It was Luft balloons. There were 99 of them.
Remember when, there's that X-Men movie which does the Cuban Missile Crisis, Days of Future Past?
Yeah.
That reminds me. Like, this did it, you know, way before that, trying to, like, tie it in. And also, I think making, like, a period piece movie about, like, a, you know, only very short distance. I don't know what to call that. It didn't happen too long ago.
The recent past.
Excellent. So we're going to take a break. We have more to talk about. We have some behind the scenes. Blaine's not here. Glenn, I have prepared some trivia for you.
Okay, I can't wait.
I hope that you have brushed up on your Watchmen knowledge. I'm sure you're going to do fine. Come back with us after the break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, we're back. It's Rewatchability. We're talking about Watchmen. We're the Rewatchmen.
Huh? No. Okay, all right. I'll allow it, but watch yourself.
Glenn Bowerman from Spacing Radio Podcast. Hello. Spacing Magazine Radio
Podcast. It's the Spacing Radio Podcast, the official podcast of Spacing Radio. I messed that whole thing up.
So what is Spacing Radio Podcast, if people don't know?
Spacing Radio is a Canadian urbanist podcast. We talk about things, all things Canadian cities, how they work, how they don't work. Mm-hmm. We talk about transit infrastructure, architecture, housing. Doug Ford a lot these days.
So my question is, inspired by this movie, do you think it would be a good idea to blow up a large part of Toronto, blame it on a superhero, and then maybe we can get something fucking fixed?
Professionally, I don't think I should be speaking about blowing up any parts of Toronto.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. I have to watch my step.
Well, we will leave it to the superheroes or villains to do. So I have some trivia for you, and, you know, there are some softballs, there are some hardballs. I think that you will do fine because you know all of the knowledge.
All of the knowledge?
You know all of the knowledge. You are Dr. Manhattan of the Watchmen universe.
I'm excited to 90 seconds from now when I answer correctly.
Okay, so in addition to being a screenwriter, David Hayter, who wrote the first draft of this particular screenplay, has a career as a voice actor as well. Can you name which video game character he has voiced throughout the entire series?
David Hayter.
Don't be a hater.
I'm sorry. That's strike one,
Glenn,
for me.
Glenn.
I can't even...
This guy knows! Do you play video games? Or do you love your precious comics too much?
I was too busy reading. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, so David Hayter is known as the voice of Solid Snake in the Metal Gear Solid franchise.
Have not played a single Metal Gear Solid game.
That's fair. I haven't played one either, but I like watched a friend play a bunch of them at his house once when I was younger.
Sure.
So, you know, I feel like I know the guy. Feel like we got a bit of a connection. Also, I mean, from what I know about the Metal Gear Solid universe, it sort of has like a similar tone to it, like a sort of vaguely conservative, don't trust the government, you know, I don't know, conspiracy theory. I don't know. I'm going to go play some video games after.
All right.
Okay. So you didn't get that one, but you could. It's not technically about the Watchmen, so I think that's fair. And neither is this question, so watch out. So prior to Watchmen, what movie did Patrick Wilson, who plays the Night Owl, and Jackie Earle Haley, who plays Rorschach, co-star in?
Oh, it was Dreamcatcher. The Stephen King thing? No?
I don't think so. It's such a terrible movie. I know Donnie Wahlberg is in Dreamcatcher.
Maybe I'm mixing up with one of the Funky Bunch. Okay.
Okay, well, we'll research that and we'll come back.
Okay.
But the answer is Little Children, which I don't know if you remember that movie. It was...
Didn't see. I knew Jackie Earle Haley was a child actor.
Yeah, he was a child actor. He was sort of best known for the Bad News Bears.
Okay.
He played, presumably, the worst bear. And
the grittiest bear.
Yeah. But his career sort of died down for a long time, and then it made a big comeback when he did this movie, Little Children, which is one of those, like, suburban neighborhood dramas. Patrick Wilson plays, like, a husband who – he's supposed to be studying for the bar degree, but he just wants to watch kids play basketball all the time, and Kate Winslet plays his, like, disaffected and bored wife. Jackie Earle Haley plays this sex offender who has moved into the neighborhood, who is – causing everyone to freak out. Don't remember if it's a great movie. The performances are pretty good. But it's fair. You couldn't have gotten that one. It's not your forte. There was no Little Children comic book.
No capes and cowls.
No capes and cowls. I think this one will be, Glenn, a little bit easier for you.
I need one.
It's a little bit more in your ballpark.
Okay.
So several Watchmen actors have shown up in the Zack Snyder produced DC comic book movies such as Justice League and Batman v Superman and Superman Gets Up.
Superman Takes Manhattan.
Can you name any of the roles that any of the characters from this movie played in any of those movies?
In the terrible, terrible DC Universe films?
Yes.
Truthfully, no. I'm sorry, man.
Damn.
These are hard.
You know, I thought that I would have to make them difficult for you, and I thought wrong. That is okay. There's no prizes, so you didn't lose anything.
You greatly overestimate my competence.
So there's been a lot of them, but just a few that I'll mention. Patrick Wilson plays King Om in Aquaman. I don't know. Didn't see it.
That. Yeah.
Okay, but Jeffrey Dean Morgan,
okay.
This one's interesting, plays a character in Batman v Superman. He plays Thomas Wayne.
Okay, yeah, I remember that now. Yeah.
And there's also an interesting thing in this movie. I don't know if you noticed it. I didn't. I really just saw it in the IMDb trivia that there's a scene that suggests that in this alternate reality, which is also an alternate reality to the comic book universe, I guess, that Bruce Wayne's parents weren't murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Everything went fine, presumably, you know. So, I don't know.
Or are you talking about Flashpoint?
What's Flashpoint?
Flashpoint is one of the great DC storylines where, I don't know if I should spoil it because it is so good. Basically, there's an alternate universe for reasons, time travel reasons.
I love alternate universes.
Where Bruce Wayne's parents don't die. Bruce Wayne is gunned down in front of his parents.
Oh my God.
And Thomas Wayne becomes a very much more militant, gun-toting, angry, like murderous Batman.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
No, this isn't that. I think it's just like a quick scene where it shows the theater that the movie was supposed to be playing at, that Thomas Wayne and Martha were supposed to have seen before. But yeah, I found that sort of interesting. And then, of course, Zack Snyder, for some reasons, would be given the reins to that franchise briefly. And he's still on as a producer for all of these movies because they're still technically part of the same franchise.
Yeah. He got the ball rolling, the terrible, terrible ball.
Yeah. Also, Billy Crudup plays, I think, somebody who must be related to the Flash in Justice League. So there's sprinkled in there.
Okay.
But you didn't get any of the questions.
No, I beefed it. Holy cow.
That's okay. That's okay. I do have some information, if you will, about the development of this movie.
Okay.
Because it has a long development history. It was first sort of optioned in 1986.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, to put that in context, that was before the Tim Burton Batman movie.
Yeah.
Like, we're looking at this movie which we say comments upon superheroes and superhero movies. They were potentially looking to do that before there was really anything to comment on.
There was the Donner Superman movie, and that's it.
Yeah, really. That's right. And yeah, it's a whole different world.
Yeah.
But it was originally, the rights were bought by Joel Silver and some other dudes, and Terry Gilliam was attached to direct it for quite a long time, starting in the early 90s, and he started raising money. He raised about $25 million, which was supposed to be a quarter of the budget.
Okay.
But it wasn't enough. And basically, Terry Gilliam, who, of course, believes he can do anything, mm-hmm. essentially said Watchmen is unfilmable.
Right.
That was his stance. And, you know, if Terry Gilliam can't do it, he'll just keep on trying to do it for years and years, whether people want to do it or not, and then people will be underwhelmed by the result. But that didn't happen in this case because it got sort of passed around. It was sort of dropped until 2001 when they hired David Hayter, Solid Snake, who also wrote several of the X-Men's movies.
Right.
They hired him to do a script, and they wanted to get Darren Aronofsky to direct, which would have been pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Darren Aronofsky, of course, did Requiem for a Dream, The Wrestler, which I really love. But he instead decided to do The Fountain.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you see that one?
I did not see that.
Oh, woof, I hate The Fountain.
Okay. I gave it a flat pass.
But I can sort of see, like, where there would be some intersection between this. Like, we could have had Hugh Jackman as Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
There's some flying through space in that movie. Oh, I hate it so much. I'll have to give it another rewatch because I just... Ugh. But, yeah, he left to do that. Then they gave it to Paul Greengrass. Then he did something else. Then Tim Burton expressed interest, who, of course, had done the two Batman movies, which basically kicked off, like, all of the superheroes.
Yeah.
Until eventually it came around to Zack Snyder. And he was basically given to it after the success of The 300, which was It was such a big and strange movie.
Yeah.
Did you see that one?
I did not. I'm not a big fan of Frank Miller. Sorry, nerd. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Frank, but we can get into how Zack Snyder and Frank Miller live in the same universe. But yeah, it didn't interest me. The source material didn't interest me. So I didn't see that one.
I didn't see it either. But it was big. A lot of people liked it.
People loved it.
It was a big thing. And of course, Gerard Butler, who is in that movie, they would use him to do the voice in the Black Freighter for this movie. So technically, he's in this movie.
Okay.
If you watch the ultimate cut.
Yeah.
Because as we talked about, you and I, Glenn, before, there's a lot of different versions of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's the theatrical version.
It's like under 3 hours.
Slightly under 3 hours. Yeah. A good solid 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy. Then there's the three-hour version, which we watched, the director's cut, which has the 24 minutes of additional footage, including the Night Owl scene where he gets murdered. Was there anything else you noticed?
I tried to find sites that compare the two cuts, but mostly it's just like 10 seconds here, 10 seconds there. Like, Zack Snyder, say what you want about him. It seems like he really is trying to be an auteur. He really cares about what his movie looks like, and so I guess it didn't do well at the box office, so they're kind of like, all right, we got to sweeten the pot for the DVD sales. Zach, you can add your 10 seconds to every scene, all those extra frames. He's like, great, this is what I was waiting for. My vision.
Two more verses of Hallelujah sex.
More boner jokes.
Oh, God. And then there's the ultimate version, which has the Black Freighter footage interlaced in it.
Which,
with the way that it is in the
comic book. We kind of explained it. In the comic book, there's interludes of a comic book about like a really dark kind of almost Edgar Allan Poe-ish story about the only survivor left of a, you know, pirate ship that's been blown up or sunk or some kind of thing.
Oh, wait. Rewind.
Okay.
Let's go back to trivia. I had a better third trivia question.
Oh,
I forgot. Because, you know,
I have one more chance.
Glenn, you and I went to theater school together.
Show did.
So that's where we know each other. We come from a theatrical background. Oh, one of the guys who edited like one of the theater play anthologies is in this movie, Jerry Wasserman.
Okay, I remember the name from the back of the textbook.
He's from the textbook,
yeah.
Canadian Modern Theater. Okay, but that's besides the point. Let's just use our theater degrees, all that money that we spent. So what part of Watchmen is inspired by Bertolt Brecht?
Oh, man.
Yes!
You are hammering me with these questions.
Yes!
I'm like, what was Mother Courage about? No.
Yeah, Mother Courage was one of the original Minutemen.
Okay.
No. Okay, I'll just tell you. So
just
apparently, Alan Moore was inspired to write the tale of the Black Freighter from the
Pirate
song.
Pirate Jenny.
Pirate Jenny.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, from the Threepenny Opera.
Yeah.
By Bertolt Brecht and Kurt Weill. So good.
Okay.
But
I needed an assist, but I got there.
Yeah.
Half a point.
And I'm glad that I got to use a little bit of my theater degree for once.
Zip.
Yeah. Oh, we forgot to talk about the TV series, which is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be on HBO. Is it J.J. Abrams or is it the guy that he works with often?
I think I heard Abrams was involved somehow.
I'll fact check it.
He could just be like an executive producer or something.
Let me say some other names in case it isn't. Carlton Cruz. Is that his name? Cruz? Anyway, never mind. But there are some interesting aspects to it. Like, so far, it's not an adaptation or a straight adaptation of the comic book.
Yeah.
It's not going to have all of the characters, though some of them are returning. Like, it looks like Ozymandias is going to be played by Jeremy Irons.
Yeah, like a much older, because in the movie and
he's
in the comic
books,
he's a youngish dude.
Yeah, played by Matt Good. But Jeremy Irons, that's an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
Alfred from the terrible Batman movie.
Scar.
Oh, Scar.
Yeah.
From the good Lion King movie.
From the interesting Lion King.
Also, they announced that Robert Redford is going to be portraying President Robert Redford.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very cool. I like that.
Yeah, because in the original comics, of course, it's actor Ronald Reagan as the president, and that didn't happen in real life, of course, but
No, no, that would be silly.
Star Wars. But yeah, there's, I mean, it seems like it'll be interesting. There's also, there's no Rorschach, but there does seem to be like a gang of people wearing Rorschach's mask. So I wonder whether it takes place after the events
of the comic. It seems like it takes place after.
Yeah, and maybe like Rorschach has become like this martyr figure.
Yeah, there seems to be like a cult of Rorschach people. Because we forgot to mention that like the whole story, the whole time through the movie, there's Rorschach, like Rorschach's journal. He
Rorschach's
kind of
journal.
Narrates everything. And then at the end of the movie, feeling that he's not going to come back from their last adventure and the confrontation with Ozymandias, he leaves his journal in the kind of crank file of a local newspaper.
Yeah, it's like some right-wing, you know,
yeah.
crank paper. It's like Alex Jones gets it or something.
Yeah, so I guess what I assume is going to happen in the TV show is like this is post the paper finding his journal and like, you know, telling the whole truth and maybe people believe it or maybe just a subsect of people, you know, buy into it and they sort of create a cult of Rorschach.
Can you imagine if something like this happened? We had all the information and then they sent it to someone like fucking Alex Jones and we're like, I don't know. If it's true, I don't want it to be true. I just don't want to validate you because you're a piece of shit.
Yeah. World peace is built on a lie and it's making the frogs gay.
Now I'm starting to wonder whether 9/11 wasn't an inside job.
It's smart to return now because I think nowadays there's a lot of crossover between that period in 1980. We were both just born, but like
yep.
it was grim. Like we had a ridiculous president. We had Reagan. We had Thatcher. We had Nazis, you know, in suspenders and Doc Martens on the street. Like it's all happening
yeah.
again. So it's like kind of a good time to return
it
to
is.
The source material.
Yeah. And... yeah, and I feel like something about the way that it is written, like with Rorschach as a more conservative figure and some of the other characters as more liberal figures, I think that it gives us like an interesting perspective mm-hmm. to look at these events because it's I find it interesting, but also I don't want to validate assholes.
Yeah, and I think they would have to sanitize Rorschach for us to have any kind of sympathy or the Rorschach fans.
Well, are we supposed to have sympathy? Like, I feel like we're supposed to bristle at his right-wing leanings.
Definitely.
Even though I feel like Alan Moore is Rorschach. Probably.
To an extent. He's kind of like a hippie-ish liberal.
Is he?
He is in real life, I believe. Like, he hates Frank Miller, who I think okay. Frank Miller is just an atrocious person. Like
right.
I don't like his take on the world, let alone the world of comic books.
Okay.
Just deeply right-wing, conservative, like just not what I feel about
yeah.
anything. Whereas Alan Moore is kind of, yeah, I think he's more of a hippie wizard kind of dude.
That's maybe fair. I maybe am getting them mixed up. Which one did like the weird sex comics?
The weird sex comics? I think I remember reading something about Alan Moore dabbling in pornography, that kind of thing. But Alan Moore is also famous for The Killing Joke.
Right.
But he's also famous for kind of regretting that. If anyone's right. ever read it, it has a very violent depiction of an act of violence against Barbara Gordon, Batwoman.
Yeah.
Years after. It's one of a lot of people's favorite Batman comic, but it is just vile. And Alan Moore has said, you know, he regrets that. He doesn't like the violence in the movie adaptation of The Watchmen.
Right.
He said that, you know, like, we made this very gritty and violent, but it's different on the page than it is seeing it in 24 frames
yeah.
per second.
Well, and Zack Snyder really, like,
he leans
takes
into
pleasure
it.
In, yeah, like, some of the scenes where people are getting, like, punched and,
yeah.
like, it's brutal.
Can we talk about that?
Because, yeah.
like, this is, I thought, with all the, like, DC universe, and now I think, like, people have... The consensus is that it's failed. It's a failed experiment. They tried to do what Marvel did.
Yeah.
I think The Watchmen is a grim story, and it was grim because at the time Alan Moore wanted to take it as a creative challenge. Can I invert the world of, like, you know, this kind of corny, Pollyannish, cape and cowl superhero world? What if superheroes were shitty? I think Zack Snyder does well with this material because I think he truly thinks that superheroes are shitty.
Yeah.
And that works for The Watchmen. doesn't work for Superman.
No!
You know, it doesn't work for The Flash. What's his power? He runs fast.
He runs fast.
Like, I just can't... You're not supposed to take them seriously. People talk about The Watchmen being the moment that comic books grew up.
Right.
But I kind of reject that because... This material really resonated with me when I was a younger man, like on the front end of my 20s.
Yeah.
I think you love that grimdark stuff when you're a teenager. Like, you've just discovered that the world can be kind of shitty and you think you're the only one who knows it and you can't wait to talk about it and it's insufferable.
Mm.
When you're actually grown up, you're kind of like, you know what? I just want to watch a guy in pajamas do a fly, maybe a punch, but like, I don't want to see Batman stab a guy through the lungs.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and if you... If you think you have to do that to this subject material, you don't like the subject material and you shouldn't be in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, at the end of the day, it's for kids.
Yeah, I agree for sure. I mean, I haven't seen many of the DC movies after, I think, the Superman one. Are they particularly violent? Are they, like, they seem visually dark and gritty. Do they sort of follow through?
Yeah.
Is that the one where Batman kills people?
Batman super kills people and, like, brutally, like... You know, breaks bones and stabs a guy, picks up a gun and shoots, which is like even Frank Miller's take on Batman, one of the grimmest takes. He still has a scene where he's like, we're not going to use guns because guns are the tool of the cowards and we're better than that. And then Zack Snyder was like, yeah, we'll watch. Just watch this.
Yeah.
Do you want to see Batman shoot people with an AK? I never did, but I've seen it now.
Yeah.
And I left the theater just like walking away like sad Charlie Brown.
I mean, I think now is like a great moment for the new show to comment on all of the superhero things and maybe on the failed DC superhero things. And hopefully it does. So let's talk about what we thought about it. Glenn, you love this movie.
Yep.
You love The Watchmen.
Yep.
You hate Zack Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
What were your feelings this time around? Did it change for you? How do you feel?
I think it still holds up. I think it still captures the essence of the source material. I think it actually makes more sense to watch it now when things are super grim than when it came out in 2009, where it was kind of a period of hope. Obama had just been elected.
Yeah.
We were still stuck in two wars that we're still stuck in. America was. But every day it makes more and more sense. And I think it can resonate with people. Zack Snyder was the perfect person to tackle exactly this.
Right.
And I think it holds up.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have some problems with it. I felt like it was, for me, it was super long. Like, I wish that there was a way to tighten it up. I respect Zack Snyder's fidelity to the source material. Like, he is relentless in including every single thing in the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether he knows why he's including everything. Like, he doesn't seem to connect to the material in a way. Like, a lot of the stuff just doesn't have, like, a lot of, like, emotion or I feel like, I don't know. It sort of lacks motivation in a strange way, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with superheroes talking, but parts of it were not super great for me. And some of the acting, some of the performances I think were really bad.
Yeah.
We already talked about Malin Ackerman. I wasn't feeling Billy Crudup this time. I think he might be bad.
He just kind of whisper talks his way through the... Like, he's one note. He talks like this the whole time.
You know? And I guess Rorschach took the talks like this note. So what else can you do? Maybe Billy Crudup also was going to do that, and then he came to set the first day and was like, oh, shit, you're talking like that?
Oh, you're doing scary voice? I was going to do scary voice.
I can do vulnerable voice.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't love him. Didn't love him in this one.
Patrick Wilson is good.
I like Patrick Wilson.
Henry Dean Morgan.
Yeah.
Good.
He's good. I don't love all of the most obvious music choices for all of them. I do like the Bob Dylan stringing the movie together because I think it tells like a little bit of a story.
Yeah.
You know, the times are changing all along the Watchtower, which is very apocalyptic and it also ties it into Battlestar Galactica and Desolation Row, which is not a great version of the song, but like, you know, those things tell a story.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting technique to sort of tie the movie together. I think I'm just still a little bit disappointed because I think that I wanted it to live up to what I felt when I first read the comic, when it seemed to answer like all the questions that I had about the superhero world, about I mean, I don't think it answered questions for me about the morality in our world. But for me, it sort of like synthesized all the things that we were talking about at the moment in terms of like dudes dressed up in capes.
Yeah.
And that felt really cool. You know, like it felt like all of my comic book knowledge had led up to this point. So maybe I overhyped it. And I don't think that I'm as like hurt by the things that it doesn't get quite right. I think I can enjoy more the things that it takes risks on, which are hilarious. Like, somebody's playing Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
Fuck, that guy is still a problem.
Right.
Fuck.
And, in a kind of Dr. Strangelove kind of war room.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's so much to love about it. I mean, I think I might rewatch this at some point in the Ultimate Cut version, so that I can see the Black Freighter stuff interlaced. Because that's also an interesting story, which, you know, Alan Moore has said sort of plays into Veidt's story and, you know, touches on all the other elements. So I think it's rewatchable.
Yeah, me too.
Good.
If you have 3 hours.
Or four.
Or four.
Depending on how much time you had. I mean, I think it'll be great as like a 9-part series on HBO. Like,
I'll definitely
that is,
be watching.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's rewatchability for this week. Thank you for listening. Glenn, where can people find you?
You can tune into Spacing Radio, Spacing Magazine's podcast. It's available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Spotify.
Stitcher?
I don't think we got a Stitcher.
Deezer?
A lot of podcatchers. People know how to get
Pinhole.
Podcasts, right? ask your nephew or, you know, your niece.
And you can find us here. We'll be here next week with – I'll cut it in. And we're also on Facebook, on Twitter. If you have a movie you'd like us to talk about, send us an email at rewatchability@gmail.com, or you can go to rewatchability.com, click on the soundpipe link, and you can record a thing requesting a movie. We will play it on the air if it's not obscene and if you don't threaten us. So, yes. And thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.